We know in our bones this election is different. The stakes are higher, the threat more serious. We have to beat Donald Trump. And all
you have reached the 911 police emergency line. Due to defunding of the police department, we're sorry, but no one is here to take your call.
That Martha McSally will say anything to get elected. Her false attacks against me were desperate and over the top. Now she's doing the same to Mark Kelly.
President Trump from office and the November ballot. Mark Kelly has revealed his true colors. He's too liberal for Arizona.
That is just a sampling of the kinds of negative ads we've all grown accustomed to. In Order, an ad encouraging voters to oust President Donald Trump against a backdrop of white supremacists wielding tiki torches. A Trump retort painting the picture of an American dystopia under former Vice President Joe Biden. Senator Kyrsten Sinema going to bat for Mark Kelly in his race against her fellow Senator Martha McSally, and McSally's jab at the man she has recently dubbed Counterfeit Kelly. These messages and their often cynical, even nasty tones have become the norm, which may explain why so many people seem to breathe a sigh of collective relief this week when they saw a new ad out of Utah. The state's two gubernatorial candidates appeared in the ad together, not to attack each other, but to promote unity.
There are some things we both agree on.
We can debate issues without degrading each other's character.
We can disagree without hating each other.
And win or lose, in Utah, we work together.
So let's show the country that there's a better way.
My name's Chris Peterson.
And I'm Spencer Cox.
And
we approve this message.
As usual in politics, the devil may be in the details here. Republican Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox has a decided lead over Democrat Chris Peterson, according to polls. But the friendly, civil ad was a welcome relief in 2020 when we wanted to know why we don't see more ads like it. Clark Olson is a professor in the Hugh Downs School of Human Communication at ASU and the founding director of the Institute for Civil Dialogue. I started by asking him for his initial reaction to this ad.
Well, I was absolutely delighted to see an ad like this because it was so uncharacteristic in this election season to see two candidates side by side, both looking very similar, both requesting the vote from the voters and admitting that they wanted a civil campaign and one that was not going to be based on attacks of each other, but was going to be on what was best for Utah.
I want to talk more in a moment about sort of how we got to this point where that kind of ad is so different than what we see normally. But let's first talk a little bit about the reaction that we've seen to it, right? Like, people seem really receptive to this. People really consider it. It seems like a breath of fresh air. Why don't you think we see more campaign ads like this from either side?
Well, I think we have such a long tradition of attack ads. And we know from all sorts of research that attack ads tend to work, and particularly if you can attack the character of your opponent, that's typically one of the most persuasive things that voters will latch onto.
You can go back quite a ways in American history to get to where we began with attack ads, but I wonder also, do they still work today? Because people are so exhausted with the negative context of this campaign and campaigns for many years now.
Well, if they weren't working, people wouldn't still be using them. And we see the long lines of early voters, and that would be an indication that at least these ads are providing a motivating factor for people to get out and actually vote. Whether or not you can trace an individual's voting behavior to having seen a single negative attack ad, it's usually the combination of seeing several of these ads and the repetitive nature of them that really crafts in someone's mind who they're going to vote for and what side they're going to believe, in addition to what their predilections already are, what side they think they're going to vote for, and then they look for information that is already consistent with that, and they can find that in the attack ads.
Interesting. So this doesn't seem like this ad from Utah is going to become, you know, the new normal by any means. It doesn't sound like to you.
Oh, I wish it would. And if I'm doing anything as an educator, right, I'm trying to educate a new generation of people to be able to model civility and practice civility and expect civility from future candidates who run. So I would like to think, as optimistic as it may be, that this type of ad, and we'll see how successful it is in Utah, would be the types of ads that we might see in the future, as opposed to these very cutting ads that we see about broken promises and blaming and all sorts of negative things about family and things that candidates have failed at. And all of these things that just point candidates in a negative direction as opposed to a hopeful direction as to what different candidates might be able to do once they got in office.
Mm-hmm. So you teach this, as you said, right? Like this is part of what you do in your role as a professor. And when you're talking to students, I wonder, what do they say? Like, do you think that they are more open to this kind of civil discussion than maybe those of us who have been around politics for longer? Or do you think they just think there's no way this will happen because they've never seen anything like it?
No, I think because we introduce it to them fairly young, it's something that they actually start craving. And they can take the policies of civility and the rules of civility that we teach them and actually apply them not only to political discussions, but they can apply them to Thanksgiving dinners, they can apply them to disagreements with roommates, and they can sit down and honestly have a conversation with someone they vehemently disagree with, oftentimes by engaging in a great deal of listening behavior, because listening is not something that we typically do. We always want to get our points in first and let people know we're right. And part of what is civility is being able to set aside your own notion of rightness just for a while. Mm-hmm. We all know we're right, but we have to sometimes just move that to a side box and be willing to listen to why somebody else who has diametrically different viewpoints than we do might have formed a radically different viewpoint and the rationale that they have behind that viewpoint.
I want to talk a little bit more before I let you go about how we got here. We mentioned sort of the history of attack ads, et cetera, in the country, but this feels different this election, especially in light of the last presidential debate that we just witnessed. Do you think that there is a future in which this will not be the norm? Do you think this has to do with just the current tenor of politics?
I think a lot of this is highly due to the incredible partisanship that we see between the two parties right now. People are doing things just to win. They're not doing things to advance the good of the country. So I think that's where a lot of the ugliness comes from. People are just running to be sure that they are able to win and get all the props of power. And once they're in government, some of them might have very good motives about what they try to do, but I think an awful lot of them, once they get to Washington, have to become a bit jaded as they see what the political process is really like. And hopefully that's something that can change. We've certainly seen past historical examples of it by Orrin Hatch and Ted Kennedy, very different candidates from very different parties with very different philosophies, shaking hands and signing bills across the aisle. And we just don't see that right now.
All right. That's Clark Olson. He's a professor in the Hugh Downe School of Human Communication at ASU and the founding director of the Institute for Civil Dialogue. Clark, thank you so much for joining us to talk this through.
You're welcome.